Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
It's time to get inside the Giants huddle.
Huddle up.
On Giants.com.
Here we go.
And the Giants mobile
app. Get them in there. Let's go.
Part of the Giants podcast network.
Welcome to another edition of the Giants Huddle podcast. I'm John Schmelk. It's all brought to you by PSE&G. Energy efficiency for game time and anytime. Visit PSEG.com/Giants for discounts, rebates, and home energy assessments. Today, we're joined by Chad Ryder from NFL.com. You know, people do one-round mock drafts. Chad laughs at those people. He does four-round mock drafts. Chad, it's good to talk to you, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I don't laugh at anybody, man. I get laughed at. That's how this process works.
Chad, by the way, is with NFL.com. Go check out all his work there. He does an excellent job. He works with Lance doing all those draft prospect profiles on the website. Yep. Lance is great. We're trying to find time in his 8-job schedule to get him on at some point before the draft, which is always tough. But we have Chad's great work and research on all these guys to talk about the guys now. So, Chad, from your perspective, where are you right now? Are you still watching late-round guys? Are you, you know, confirming information, bringing everything together? Where are you in your process about just under 4 weeks away from the start of this draft?
Well, now that we have the combine data, we have I've seen, you know, most everybody play. We're getting in pro day information, which is key for some of the guys. We're going to be late round picks that will stand out there. So if somebody really stands out, I'll go watch them if I haven't seen them already. And or if I have seen them and they do great, I will go remind myself of what that player was, whether I had them as a late round pick or not, and then come to the conclusion, because not everybody who runs a fast 40 gets drafted, but you have to show something on the field as well as some great attribute, you know, on the track to really get drafted. So it's that time of year where you're kind of cleaning this stuff up, looking at mock drafts, trying to figure out what are the surprise moves that people are not anticipating. Cause that's what I work on. You know, we have DJ does a great job, you know, talking to the league. Lance does a great job. Bucky's out there. And my deal is trying to find the things that people don't expect to happen. Because every year we get surprised by things, right? Well, I'm trying to be the one guy who's not surprised by anything. And so that's where my attention is focused over the next month.
That's great. And by the way, we're going to dig a little bit deeper with Chad here because he has such a voluminous knowledge of all these draft prospects. We're going to kind of dig into mid-round, day two, early day three picks with him. But we'll touch on the first round first here, Chad, because in your four-round mock, I think you picked a player that I'm not sure I consider it a surprise, but I think it's one Giant fans would maybe raise an eyebrow at. Not because he's a bad player. Trent Simpson, the linebacker out of Clemson, really fast, run and hit guy, did really well at the combine. But they signed Bobby Okereke in the offseason. They have a need for another linebacker that can play three downs for sure. What was your thought process when you got to the Giants at 25? You can talk about needs if you want, but I'm kind of more thinking about where value was with the players that were left on the board. Because really, when you're picking that late in the first round, that's half the battle, right? You don't know who's going to be there to really figure it out. So when you got there, where were you finding value in positions of strength when you got to 25?
Well, Simpson's pretty easily the top off the ball linebacker in the draft, and he could go as high as 18 to Detroit. So if he's available at 25 for the Giants, I think they would have interest. And I think they have interest in him, just generally speaking. And I think when you marry the best at a position with the value at that pick, you know, it makes a lot of sense for him. You could, like you said, you could go in many different directions at 25. In fact, I'll be in one of my future mocks, I will be actually projecting them to move down in the first round or even out of the first round altogether. Because I think that's where they're at right now. They could accumulate some more picks a little bit later if the guy that they don't like is available, you know, at that spot. So at 25, lots of different possibilities, but I thought Simpson, in terms of a guy who's going to be an impact player, he's going to impact that defense immediately. You need another guy at that level of the defense, especially with a, you know, pretty strong, you know, defensive line in front of you. You can make a lot of plays. So I like him for them as a pick.
I love your trade down idea, but I wonder here, Chad, because, you know, to me, when I've graded this out, you know, maybe 15 first round grades. So I think pick it at 25, maybe you'll get one of those guys. I don't know if that's how the draft's going to fall. And I wonder what a team will be looking for to trade up. So do you think we're going to get a lot of movement at the end of the first round this year, given I think you're in a pretty big tier, right? Once you get past that first tier, I think the next year is pretty big in terms of, you know, guys in the same type of tier grade-wise. Do you think we're going to get a lot of movement here at the end of the first round?
I think there's a chance. This would be a year where we don't see as much. But the thing is the AFC is so competitive right now. When you're looking at teams like the Bills and the Chiefs who really want to, you know, the Chiefs want to stay on the top. The Bengals want to, you know, get to the top. The Bills want to get – and there's only so many impact guys on offense in this draft. And I think so receiver – I think some of these teams are going to want one of these guys, one of these particular guys. So that's one position I think there could be some movement on. And last year we saw it like in the, you know, in the 10 to 12 area, but this year we might see it more in the 21 to 25 area because the talent just isn't, you know, quite as good. So I think there are going to be some spots where teams are going to want to move. And so I think we'll see a little bit of movement there, but, you know, as you said, there is a big, maybe even bigger than normal, a tier of like from 20 to 60 where the talent is, you know, fairly similar. But I think it only takes a team or two to really want a particular guy for some movement to happen.
No question. I think a lot of Giant fans are and this is kind of where I'll end the first round conversation here. I think corner and wide receiver are two spots, Chad, that I think Giant fans think that they need some help in. What do you think it's going to look like at those two spots at 25, because my worry is that the top four corners are going to be gone. Banks, Porter, Gonzalez, Witherspoon. And then I wonder if that next guy is going to be worth 25. And then a wide receiver, the Giants have all these slot players, right? It's Paris Campbell, Wando Robinson, Sterling Shepard, Jamison Crowder.
Yeah.
Is there going to be an outside receiver there, not named Quentin Johnson, if he's even going to make it to that point, that you know you can bring in and play outside? So I do wonder if, for those two perimeter spots of need where I do think the Giants need to add some people, I just don't know who's going to be there and if that value is going to be there at 25.
Yeah, it might not. And so that's one reason I say they might trade down if like Simpson gets picked. But I think they can find, we'll talk about a guy later, that they can find receivers later in this draft that can fill the need of what they want. So they don't have to do that in the first round if, and again, this is where I talk about the receivers, you know, the Chiefs moving up for somebody, the Bills moving up for somebody, that this, some of that is going to happen. And so the Giants might be in a spot where the top receivers and cornerbacks are gone. However, some teams may like a guy like Kelee Ringo enough to pick late in the first round. And so that might be a guy on their radar. And of course the Giants are also potentially looking for a center. So if they like Tippmann, you know, John Michael Schmitz, some of these guys, that's a trade down possibility for them. They can get that even later in the first round. But, you know, centers, when they're drafted, they're picked, they're in the first round, they're in that 20 to 20, you know, eight. So the Giants are in there at 25 too. So that's a possibility as well.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about center. I think that would be a more comfortable trade down scenario for me, Chad. Or do you have one of the centers? I don't know. I'm assuming John Michael Schmitz is your first center. Maybe he's not. But do you think you get enough value at 25 with this year's center crop, or would that have to be a trade down for you?
Well, I don't. I think if you think a guy is going to lead your offensive line for 10 years, I think that's fine at 25. I really am. I think at that point, you know, when you talk about top 20, and that's like everybody, a lot of people were projecting Tyler Lindenbaum to go in the top 20 last year, and I knew that wasn't going to happen. So the Ravens moved back and picked him, right? I could see the same thing you know, happening with Schmitz, or if they like Tippmann or somebody else, or even Cody Mauch, North Dakota State could play center as he did it in the Senior Bowl. So there's a few different options late in the first round.
Yeah, you have Mauch at 27 in your four round mock. Just for the record, so fans know kind of where you have him, and I think he's a really good player too. The Giants have also talked about defensive line as a need position and a premium position, and I'll throw edge into that too, just because Joe Shane comes from Buffalo, where Brandon Bean just keeps drafting edge rushers and defensive linemen, right? That's just kind of what they do. What do you think about that crop at the end of that first round area, you know, in terms of the edge players that might be there? I know you have Miles Murphy dropping in your mock draft, and I've, you know, talking to who I've talked to around the league too, that would not necessarily surprise me. And then defensive tackle, and the guy that I really like, you actually have him going to the Eagles at 23 out of Tommy Wadabare, who I think will be a first round pick based on his combine testing. Talk about that kind of group, or do you think that's a better, you know, day two target if you're looking for some help up front on defense?
Yeah, I mean, if a guy like Nolan Smith drops at that point, I don't, it's hard to pass him up, I guess, you know, at that level. And I think, you know, for defensive tackle, if you're not going to get Kancey, if you're not going to get Tommy, wait a little bit on that one. Get that one a little bit later, defensive tackle. So, you know, if a great values are there, you know, fine. But I don't know that you're going to, you know, look, Miles Murphy, if they're willing to use that pick on that and forget about some of the other needs, I can't really blame him for that either. You know, Greg Russo is a really good comp for him in terms of the value that a lot of people thought he was going to be a mid first round pick. And he really could have been, but he dropped down that far. When you're dropping like that, you know, A, if New Orleans doesn't go up and get him and you end up seeing it, I wouldn't blame them for, I wouldn't blame Shane for taking him whatsoever.
Yeah, I think he's a good upside pick given his athleticism and everything at that point. I'm 100% with you on that. Other edge players, do you think they're going to be there? Because once the Giants are not picking in like the top 10, right? So they got to wait till in the 50s to make their second round pick. I'm just going to throw some names at you. You don't have to touch on all of them. Touch on whoever you want. The Will McDonalds, the Keon Whites, the Isaiah Foskeys, the Brian Brzez, the, you know, Gervon Dexters. I know I'm mixing edge and defensive line a little bit.
Yeah, no, 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 no. That's the problem with picking late in the round, right? I mean, that's the issue. I think if you're looking at the late second round, you're looking at guys like Keanu Benton. If you're looking for a defensive tackle, that would be the guy late in the second round you'd be looking at. For edges, Byron Young from Tennessee might be a good pick for them. It kind of runs a BJ Ojulari, which would be great. I've tried so hard to like put him in with his brother in these mock drafts.
I'll tell you, as a second round value, Chad, he's a good football player.
Right. So I think those would be the guys they'd be looking at, and they'd be good value if they ended up going that direction.
So you do think there is value to be found in the edge class at the end of the second round, where you could find a player that'll help you right away?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's always interesting to find out how much of a need a team really considers when we think they have a need, right? Like if they don't pick a center in rounds one or two, you know, Giants fans are not going to be pleased. I don't think that, because I think that's a major thing that they want to see. You can get value at center later in the draft. So, you know, I get it, but it's hard for me to mock them not picking a center in the first couple of rounds. And certainly cornerback is up there. And some of these other spots are up there of more of a need, but again, you know, teams aren't going through a grocery list. I say this every year. They're not saying, okay, aisle one is corner, aisle two. You have a group of players you have from that you meet some need, not maybe your number one, but some need in that value area. So if they go add your defensive tackle in the second round, the value is there. You know, there's a lot worse things to pick.
Yeah, Chad, what I always say, people call up, oh, you know, Giants, I think the Giants should go center first round, wide receiver second round, corner third round. And my answer is inevitably, you do not pick positions, you pick players.
Yeah.
That it's there. You just can't look at it that way. And to your point, you give them Joe Tippmann, the center from Wisconsin, around number two. Yeah. Taller center, 6'6", comes from a good offensive line program, obviously. You know, Wisconsin knows how to churn those guys out. Talk a little bit about him. And if they don't go center round one or two, and I think that would be, you know, the Schmitz, and you talked about those guys, Mauch, and, you know, maybe if you think Avila could play center, I don't know about that, but some people do. Who are some of the later round centers that you do like enough where you think, all right, maybe not start week one, but you can kind of get him there past midseason.
Yeah, I mean, there's some options. Like Tippmann from Wisconsin's a very powerful center. He's got some mobility. He's not an elite athlete or anything, but he's a good mix of teams that want to run some zone and some power. He can do that. He's a strong upfront force. Ethan Posick could be a good, comp for him in terms of a guy that's going to stick around the league for a long time, maybe not be a superstar, but be really solid center. So I like him in that area of the draft. Luke Whipler from Ohio State's undersized guy, but, good mobility. Any guy that steps in to a team as a sophomore and just takes over the line is really – and Ohio State centers tend to do pretty well. So teams, pay attention to that kind of stuff. So I think he's really solid third-round guy, maybe early fourth-round guy. And I think there are other options a little bit. Like Steve Avila from TCU is another interesting guy, because he played guard a lot this year for TCU, but to me, he really fits more as a center. I mean, I think he could probably play both, but when he was at center, he's very good there, very sturdy guy who's going to run that power scheme for you a lot. So I like him quite a bit. And it's not a super deep center group this year. So I think honestly, if teams that really need one don't get one in the first three rounds, it might be tough to plug them in right away and really, have him lead the line, so to speak.
Yeah, I really like Avila too, by the way. I think he's going to be a good player. One player, and I'll throw this at you blind, that Giant fans have kind of asked me about, and I haven't had a chance to watch him yet. Maybe you have. Have you watched Stromberg at all?
Yeah, he's a solid day three guy. Limited athletically a little bit, but really tough. Again, if they don't have one yet, they pick him in the fourth round. That's a pretty good deal. And I think he's, he's got a chance to be a starter. But he's one of the few guys, honestly, on day three that I'd really feel that way about.
Yeah, very good. I appreciate that for sure. All right. So when you were sitting there and you gave him Tippmann, where else did you find value in the second round? Similar to the question that I asked you about in round number one, where'd you see a bunch of guys at spots that you kind of really thought you'd be able to find someone? How much were you tempted by wide receiver in that spot? They just missed out on Marvin Mims, who I think would be a pretty strong second round pick. And then I'm going through your next receiver taken. It looks like is Kayshon Boutte in round number three, and then Jonathan Mingo shortly after that. So it seems like the Giants caught a little bit of an end of a wide receiver run there at the end of second round.
Yeah, I mean, I like Mingo. If you're looking for that outside receiver, that would probably be the guy I'd go with at the end of the second round. There's going to be a lot of Mims and Josh Downs and Boutte. Those guys are going to be more slot. And Boutte is kind of interesting because a lot of people ripped him at the combine for not jumping very high and having, a fair 40-yard dash time. Not great. But I'll tell you what, I was on the floor during those workouts, and him and Jordan Addison were smooth as silk. And I think Boutte is a little, once he was considered a top five pick, so now everybody thinks, oh, you should just be, he's not going to be that good and blah, blah, blah. But I think he's a little better than that. It kind of reminds me of Jarvis Landry, actually. Very similar size, coming out of LSU, not the fastest guy. I mean, he's faster than Landry was coming out, but he's going to have that similar role where he's just going to catch everything. He's going to make plays after catch. So if a team like the Giants want that kind of guy, I don't know if they need another slot guy, but really Mingo is the deep threat, is the big play receiver that's got a good chance in round two. So that if the Giants went that way, that's who I'd look at. And I think there's some corner prospects that would be available there too. I mean, Emmanuel Forbes coming in at 166 pounds, it's going to be hard for somebody to take him in the top 50 at that weight. Maybe they will because he's a talented guy.
His tape is great, man. Whew.
Yeah. And, it's funny. A lot of people say, oh, he had X interceptions, so that means he's good. Well, if you look at those interceptions, there was a lot of tip balls, and he wasn't always in great coverage position, and the ball got – so I'm not – I think some people are a little high on him than I am. But in the second round, later in the second round, where I expect he'll go – good value there. And, there's other guys that I'm probably not remembering right now, but, you know, oh, DJ Turner from Michigan would be a good pick. Julius Brent from Kansas State could get that high into the second round too, because they're tall, long guys. So
Tyreek Stevenson, another one, right?
Yeah, I expect him to go top 50, but you know, who knows? So there's always good value in that position in the end of the second round. So I think that would be another hot spot for the Giants.
When do you fall off a cliff at corner where you're now like, all right, now I don't know if I can use this guy as a starter this year?
You know, I think the guys that I mentioned would probably be the end of the list.
Okay.
I think after that, you're looking at slot guys. And you know what? I shouldn't even say it that way, because there are going to be some valuable slot guys picked in this draft. Clark Phillips from Utah is 5'8". He's not fast, but he's going to get in people's faces and the slot. He's going to be an effective defender, and he might not go until round 4. But he's going to be an effective defender. So, but if you're looking for an outside corner, starting corner, it's hard to get outside the top 75.
All right, let me just jump back to wide receivers here really quick. And by the way, Kyle Blue Kelly, another potential third round corner that you have in your mock going at 96 to the Cardinals. He's a guy that can play outside too. Back to the wide receivers in round 2 for a second. We'll see if they get to 57 or wherever the Giants pick. I have to get the exact number. I'm not sure if they get there, but let's just assume they do. Put Rashee Rice, Cedric Tillman, and I'm a big A.T. Perry guy, so you might not have him there. I'm putting him into that conversation, and you can yell at me for that if you want. Put those three guys, again, I'm looking for an outside receiver, right?
Yeah.
Compare, contrast, what do you think of those three?
Well, I like Rice a lot. He deserves to be a top 40, 45 pick, in my opinion. So I think he's, to be honest, when I watch him, I think a lot of Justin Jefferson. When I saw him at LSU, he's not going to maybe go as high, but really the guy got targeted 170 times this year. That's a serious workload for a wide receiver. And he was really good. And I think he can do a bit of everything. So mid second round for him, if he's available to them, great. Cedric Tillman's a guy that's really underrated, underappreciated for a short area quickness at 215 pounds. And I think he's a guy that maybe slips into that later second round that shouldn't. Maybe somebody trades up for him, one of those kind of guys. So if the Giants could land him as an outside guy, fantastic. I mean, you watch him versus Kelee Ringo, you know, he leaves Ringo in the dust a lot on comeback routes. So he's really a guy to watch in the second round if he can't go higher than that. A.T. Perry, in theory, should be a great receiver. I didn't see it on a down-by-down basis this year. I think he was very inconsistent, and I think he's one of those guys that either is a guy that draft Twitter loves and doesn't ever amount to much, or he just he puts it all together when he gets to the league and becomes the guy that everybody thinks he can. And I think he could be anywhere from, like, Gabriel Davis, you know, kind of guy to – you know, to something better where he's making plays. Cause he's got some really nice body control at times. He's got the striding speed downfield. There's some things I like about him, but I wanted to like him more this year than what I saw. So, you know, third round, fourth round somewhere, that's where I see him going.
It's funny. I haven't gotten the sense that he has much love out there on draft Twitter. Maybe I'm following the wrong guys, but I agree. I think his best trait is the body control and ball tracking on downfield throws. Like, there are a couple of throws that I watched where he's, you know, going down, looking for the ball on his inside shoulder, has to turn to his outside shoulder. He still makes the catch, which is really difficult for, you know, receivers to do. And I think he was pretty good at that.
Yeah, he flashes that for sure. It's just a matter of when you get it and when you don't. And, you know, and again, like a guy like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, right? Mm. Gets picked a little bit later, becomes a deep threat who does exactly what you're saying. And when MVS got his hands right in the NFL, he became what he, you know, the potential was there. So Perry really does have that potential to do that.
No, I'm totally with you on that. All right, so the Giants, you do have him taking a wide receiver in round 3, Jaden Reed out of Michigan State. Now, he's a guy that can play inside and outside.
And outside,
I talked to him at the Senior Bowl. I think he kind of said to me that You know, it seems like teams are really thinking about me more inside in the pros, but he's 5'11", 180. You know, he's a guy I think can play outside. So we just talked about a bunch of second-round wide receivers. Besides Reed, who else was kind of in the mix for you there as end of third round, start of fourth round type of targets and wide out?
Well, you're getting into, again, some guys that are a little more slats. Tyler Scott from Cincinnati, for example, you know, very quick guy, kind of the day three version of Jalen Hyatt, maybe from Tennessee, that lean, very quick feet, you know, but more inconsistent, maybe not as fast as what people thought he was going to be. So that he's kind of coming off a disappointing combine, you know, in that sense. I have Perry in that, you know, discussion in the third round. Mingo Boutte, we've talked about a lot. Frankly, this is not an outstanding year for receivers. It's just not. It's just very average. And so it's going to be interesting to see how many receivers actually get picked on day three. Another guy that's very interesting that the Giants might have some interest in is Michael Wilson from Stanford. Outside receiver, big-bodied receiver. You know, again, the consistency wasn't always there. He fought through some injuries, but when he's in the game, he's very tough and he runs very good routes. And I think he will be a really solid NFL receiver, number two guy that you can not only, you know, use deep, but also on slants. You can get through the second level on digs. I mean, he can do a lot of different things. So he's just one of these third, fourth round guys that is going to stick around and just, you know, look, Darius Slayton has become something with the Giants, right? And I think Perry could even be a little better than that. And so I think that might be a good fit for them, you know, in that third round area. Another guy is Parker Washington from Penn State, who I couldn't even get on my mock draft last time. There's just too many guys. So he's another guy who's going to be in that conversation. Now, whether a Giants want a guy that size, I don't know, but he's another guy that's going to be in that round three, four kind of conversation, but more of a slot guy, more of a tough slot kind of player.
Yeah, very thick, good run after the catch, yeah. Break some tackles. But yeah, smaller guy for sure. He's kind of like a destitute man's Deebo Samuel type of guy.
Yeah, he's a running back. He looks like a running back in a receiver's body. And, you know, Golden Tate, some people might say, oh, he's kind of a Golden Tate. I'm like, yeah, maybe. But, I am a little bit lower than that. But, again, when you're talking third, fourth round guys, it's not as clear. And honestly, the Giants, if they don't want to slide, if they think Wandale's going to be back, if they think Shepard's going to be able to contribute something, maybe they just wait and try to find another Slayton or somebody like that in rounds 5, 6, 7, and to be that taller guy that is able to get downfield for you.
Yeah, and I think Landers, right, from Arkansas.
Landers,
is kind of one of those guys, and I'm trying to remember who I had one other guy. He ran really well at the combine. I didn't like him quite as much as Landers, and the name's escaping me. I'll look it up after I ask you this next question. Fourth round, we haven't talked about safeties yet. You have the Giants taking Jair Brown out of Penn State. Really good ball production in college. Talk about him, and then just generally what you think of the safety class here, Chad, because the Giants did lose Julian Love, so they don't have an incumbent starter next to Xavier McKinney. They have Dane Belton, who they drafted last year, who they like. They have Jason Pinnock, who came over from the Jets, who played a lot last year. Who knows if they bring back veterans like, you know, Landon Collins and Tony Jefferson.
Right.
But what do you think generally of this safety class and Brown, who you gave them in the fourth round? What's kind of the sweet spot for you for drafting a safety?
Safety class is not great this year. There might be a couple that go in the second round, maybe three that go in the second round. By the fourth round, I think people have pushed Brown up a little bit higher than they should have because they think he's kind of like another Juwan Brisker. And I don't quite see that. But I think in terms of a guy, look, I know they drafted Belton last year, but more bodies of that position are needed. And Brown is going to come in. He's going to play special teams for you. He's a really strong hitter. And I think that kind of value in the fourth, I thought, well, maybe they'll just continue to build depth at that position and see what they can find instead of bringing back, you know, veterans, like you mentioned, really try to get some more young talent at that position. So I like Brown's a tough guy. I like him, but I just don't think he's at the Brisker level. And then the position overall, I don't know. There's going to be a handful drafted on day two, but I don't think you're better off waiting for that position rather than jumping the gun on it, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. And Trey Palmer and Wicks were two of the other taller guys.
Yeah, Trey Palmer is, he's only 6. I mean, he's not super tall, but he's that fast downfield guy. And so, you know, some of the other guys that that I've just brought up here. Bryce Ford Wheaton from West Virginia is going to be a day three guy. Landers, like you mentioned.
Andre Yeshivas, right, out of Princeton, another guy.
That's out of out of Princeton, yep. And then Grant Dubose from Charlotte is another guy who's going to be that day three guy who's really – he's got some talent to him. So there's going to be some options for him on day three there.
I'll throw Xavier Hutchinson out there too. Not really.
Yes, absolutely.
Guy. I think he's more of a possession guy, right? Than he is a speed guy, but he's certainly a guy that can play inside and out.
Yeah. And it's not like he doesn't make plays downfield either, but I think he's in that same mid round area. Could turn out to be a pretty good receiver.
What's the sweet spot for running backs here, Chad? Because, you know, Saquon Barkley, one of your contract right now on the tag, you know, the Giants could always try to, you know, future proof that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think round four? Because I'm looking at your fourth round mock here, and I'm seeing, and I'm not surprised because this is a great running back class. There are some really good running backs that you have going in the fourth round that I could see being real contributors in the NFL.
Yeah. I think that's what it's become for running backs. You know, maybe a handful are picked on day two, and then it really, in day three is when they really come off the board. I had a last second change to make. So I took Izzy Abanikanda off the fourth round, and then he goes out today, runs like in the 4.3s on his pro day. So I really got to force him in there. But the thing is, it's so hard to project running backs to go in the top four rounds because teams use so many of them. They already have a lot of veterans on their roster. And so you don't necessarily know if they're going to think that that's the position that they're going to use one of their premium picks on. So it's hard to project these guys, but yes, fourth round, there's a ton of talent. There's going to be a ton of talent in the fifth round. There'll probably be not a handful, but two or three guys. They're going to be really strong contributors next year. So I think third, fourth round is really – so I think the Giants, depending on what they're looking for, you know, Matt Breida is a pretty good number two. But if you – depending on what you're looking for, right? So if you're looking for more speed, you got Condre Miller from TCU, be a pretty good pick. If you're looking for more – you know, a stronger guy, maybe a Dwayne McBride from UAB might be in that. Chris Rodriguez from Kentucky, who may not end up going until the sixth round, but he's going to come in there and pound people, you know.
He's a grinder, man. Whew.
Yeah, so there's a lot of really good talent, day three talent at that position. So it's hard for me to put a bunch of guys in round two or three because teams know that. And a lot of people think it's because running backs are not valued. But honestly, I think it's because there are so many good running backs. It's more of a supply and demand, right? If there's 10 guys that you know can play in the league, why would you use a second round pick on one when you can get one in the fourth? You really have to be special to get to be a top 50 pick at running back.
Yeah, I mean, just to give you an example and give the fans an idea, you have Chase Brown going in round four, right?
Yeah.
The guy was like, what, a 1,300, 1,500 yard back in the Big Ten this year. He can catch. He's 5'10", he's over 200, he's almost 210 pounds. Like, if this was 10 years ago, that guy's probably a second-round pick.
Right, exactly. And somebody may like him enough to take him in the third. I mean, it's really, you know, one of those situations where a team may just have a particular fit. Now, Chase isn't the most agile guy. He's not going to be, you know, causing people to he's not going to elude a lot of pro defenders.
He's steady, though, very steady.
Yeah, but he's steady. I mean, that's the guy that, look, Tyler Allgeier out of BYU ran for 1,000 yards this year, fifth round pick. That's what you get with a guy like Brown and some of these other guys that are come in there. You give them 15 carries a game. They're going to carry the mail for you. And even if they're not Bijan Robinson in terms of talent, but they're going to get the job done for you. So that's day three is probably where I'd look if I were the Giants.
Couple more here for Chad real quick, Chad. We haven't, you know, I was torn. When the Giants traded for Darren Waller, I got excited because, you know, Daniel Jones would have someone good to throw to. But then I'm sitting here, oh, wait, hold on, I have Waller. They, you know, obviously, they last year they drafted a tight end who was a really good contributor this year with Bellinger, absolutely. And I love this tight ends class so much, and now I can't really talk about it. It kind of sucks because I love these guys. I mean, I think you could have four or five top 50 picks, four top 40 picks.
Yeah.
I mean, and you can get a good one going all the way into rounds four or five. Just talk about this class for me at tight end and how deep does it go?
Yeah, well, there could be 20 some drafted, and that doesn't happen. So it's really a strong class. And I think even with Waller, Bellinger, I think they still take one day three. I mean, why wouldn't you? Unless they think Lawrence Cager is going to be, you know, great or something. But I think you've got guys like Michael Ezeki from UCLA, who nobody really talks about, but you'd him in the fifth, you know, sixth, seventh round. athletic guy, catch the ball, really tough runner. Some of these guys are going to play for a long time, even though they're, you know, fifth, sixth round, seventh round picks. So I think the Giants would be, you know, would be looking at one of those guys a little bit later to, because look, Waller's gotten injured before. And you need depth at that position, especially if you want Daniel Jones to really be his most effective. You want three good tight ends. Every pro offense should have three good tight ends. And so, you know, I wouldn't doubt if they took a later pick on one.
All right. Couple general draft questions, Chad, if you have another couple minutes. Sure. Guy that you love that other people, in your opinion, aren't high enough on. You can take it at any level of the draft.
Oh boy. Well, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I only marginally look at other people's stuff because I don't want it to influence too much of what I'm thinking. I see some stuff, but you know, I don't want to overdo it.
Okay, so I will rephrase.
I've loved Cody Mauch since day one this year, and I think I'm maybe the only person that has put him in mock drafts the whole time in round one. And maybe that's a mistake, but I love that guy. I want that guy on my team. I would give him a higher grade than I gave Trevor Penning coming out last year. He could play anywhere. He's tough. He's athletic, really, really good player. And so Cody's been in, he's going to continue to be in the first round of my mock drafts going forward. And I just love that kid. I think he's so good. And of course he's engaging, great attitude and the teeth and the red hair and all that. But on the field, he's really tough. He plays with an edge, but he doesn't go over the line. He knows when the whistle stops, he stops. So I love that guy. And, you know, I hope he gets picked in the first round. I think he's a really good player.
Is there a guy that you've watched a bunch where you like, you think you like him, but then you can't, you're on the fence about him. Where should I put him? I can't quite figure him out. Anyone that's giving you trouble in this draft class?
Yeah, all of them. because look, what you and I think of these players has nothing to do with what teams think of these players.
Zero.
Right. So we know that. And here's a great example. Quentin Johnson from TCU. There are times where he looks fantastic. But I can't get the thought of guys like Denzel Mims out of my mind when I watch Quentin Johnson, because you see the big plays they make and you're not sure if that's always going to be there. And you think, you know, a guy that the ultimate guy of this is Jonathan Baldwin, who was at Pittsburgh and the Chiefs picked. This is how I've been doing this too long. But you look at these guys that, you just don't know if it's all going to be there. And if it is, excellent. You've got something. But Quentin Johnson's a guy that I don't know that I'll ever put in the first round of my mock unless I get real information. But I think he's one of these guys that a lot of people do, but I don't know. I see a lot of Denzel Mims and Josh Doctson, who ended up, you know, in the first round out of TCU, and it didn't really work out very well. So he's just one of those guys that you get that bias in your head and it's hard to shake. You have to trust your gut in this situation. And I've got a prodigious gut, so I try to pay attention to it. But, you know, and sometimes it's wrong and sometimes you're right. But he's one of the guys that, you know, I'm just not quite sure about.
Yeah, you know, Big 12 wide receivers, it's not a great list over the past bunch of years.
Look, and I'll take Marvin Mims all day.
No, he's a good player. I like him too.
Before the combine, I put him at 58 to the Cowboys, and I think a lot of people were not interested in him until third or fourth round. But that dude is tough for his size, so I'll take that guy any day of the week.
Yeah, and I was thinking more like those bigger perimeter Big 12 receivers.
Sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, and so look, but Johnson also makes some fantastic catches, and you talk about body control as we dub some of these guys. He shows that. So, but you know, we all have our. And you know, it's funny, I root for every single one of these players.
Oh, you have to.
So if I do a mock draft and I don't have a guy as high as some other people, like, oh, you don't like that guy. I'm like, no, it's just that I value some other players more, and you try to make it fit what teams want. And look, good players last until the third round. It happens every year, or even the fourth round. So it's not like if I put a guy in the second round, I don't think he's going to be a good player. There's only so much room for a guy in every round. So, you know, just do the best we can, right?
Chad, you can't like more than one player at a position. You either hate them or you like one and then you hate the other ones. That's how it works.
Yeah, no. Shades of gray, my man. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. And by the way, the other thing about Quentin Johnson that makes him weird, you know, these 6'3 tall wide receivers that are vertical threats, usually their big strength isn't run after the catch. Yet somehow he's really good at that. He's a really weird combination, but he's not great at contested catches at 6'3, but he's great after the catch and he's skinny. He's a weird combination of traits.
You know what? He's Christian Watson. We just saw this last year. Christian Watson's very similar and he went early round two. So that's another reason that I've kind of put him in that category is like, okay, I can see a team even trading up to get him early in round two, like the Packers did last year. So that's the kind of the comp I'm running with really is that Christian Watson comp, who by the way, could turn out to be a pretty good NFL wide receiver. Yeah. Right. So, you know, we'll get to see.
And this is kind of where I'll end with you. And I think you brought this up too, right? It's just hard for us to figure this because I think a lot of the ways, Chad, what I've learned doing this over the bunch of years is what ultimately determines whether or not these players turn flashes into consistent production is information that we generally, as people that cover this from the outside, don't have access to, right? Whether it's the medical stuff, which is, you know, in this case, maybe not as important, but more the psychological testing, you know, how good of a learner are they? How hard are they willing to work? Do they really love it? You know, are they willing to put all the extra hours and time into to become not just students of the game, but better physically at what they're doing? And I think this for lack of a better word, background information and character information is a lot of what determines whether or not these guys are going to become the players that we envision them to become. And that's why teams have scouts. That's why they have private investigators. Yeah. And I think that is such a big factor here that's more than just the tape, which is what we're working off of for the most part, that's going to determine which one of these guys truly end up being great, which is why, frankly, this whole damn thing's such a crapshoot.
Yeah, but I think, yes, but when you watch a guy on film, if he doesn't work hard, it shows up on the film.
That's fair.
Okay. I mean, and if his mind is not where it's supposed to be at a given moment, it shows up. So you can see it a little bit, but the fact is that none of us were the same people when we're 21 versus when we're 27.
Especially after you get a check for like $3 million.
Exactly. So it's all projection. I don't want to say it's a crapshoot, but it's all projection. You are trying to figure out what this guy is going to look like in 3 years, 4 years. And I think that's very difficult. And I think the information can go both ways. I think there can be information overload for teams where you're not paying enough attention to what's on the field and you're worried about things that are off field. And some of those things are worth worrying about. But in some sense, you'll see teams. The Chiefs are a perfect example. They took Tyreek Hill when a lot of teams may not want to take him. They overlooked, you know, they overlook size requirements that maybe some other teams have. I don't know why no other team wanted Creed Humphrey until late in the second round, but that was ridiculous to me. He should have been a first round pick.
And by the way, you watched Creed Humphrey at the Senior Bowl that year and he won every rep. Like he was 100%. I've never seen a performance like that from an offensive lineman at the Senior Bowl. He was unbelievable.
And so teams like that worry less about arm length and things like that and focus on the player. And if they have off-field concerns, they don't take them off the board, but maybe they take them, a round or two. And so I think you can overdo that as a team too, because some of these guys have really rough upbringings.
Yeah.
And we, you know, those of us lucky enough to not have had that, I think we can overlook the idea that they mature as they get older. They really become great players. They become great members of the community. So it's a balancing act. And I think you can overdo that extra information as well as, in our case, not having it as much. You kind of miss some stuff. And I think, you know, we are going to miss some stuff. But I think it goes both ways.
No, I think that's fair. All right, I'm not going to let you get off the hook. What's happening with the quarterbacks?
Well, here's my take as of today, right? I think you've got the top three in Stroud, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson. I think Anthony Richardson is the Josh Allen of this draft, not Will Levis. And I think he is going to be an outstanding player. If that dude ends up with Shane Steichen in Indianapolis.
Oh yeah. Look out.
Whew, you know, that's going to be rough for the AFC. So I think that's where we're looking at Stroud and Young, probably in that order, Richardson going to the Colts. And then you've got Levis, who's going to be, he's very much a Jay Cutler to me. So in that 10, 11, 12 area, he could go maybe a little bit later if he falls through there. I think somebody will go up and get him at some point, 10, 11, 12, maybe all the way down to 14 to the Patriots. And then you've got Hendon Hooker, who's a big question mark. I think in the end, he will end up being that guy. It's about time we have a team trade up in the bottom of the first round for a quarterback.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Years now. So we had Bridgewater, and then we had Lamar, and now it's time for Hendon Hooker. Late, the Raiders moving up to get him. Or
I think you're forgetting the great Paxton Lynch, right? Oh, no way. Nobody traded up for him. I think they just stuck
in. No, Denver traded up.
Oh, they did. Lynch.
Similar thing, right? So I think that's what we're looking at. That's my guess as of today. That's where I'm sitting at with him right now. Or he could look a lot of Geno Smith comparisons with Hooker. So, you know, maybe early two, something like that. Somewhere in that range is where I see that. And then after that, Aiden O'Connell probably in the third round. The Lions would be a great fit for the Lions to play behind Goff. Yeah. And Tanner McKee from Stanford would be next after that. And some guys in day three that, one of them, look, after Brock Purdy did what he did, I think teams really need to pay attention to what they're doing on round three. And if you don't have three good quarterbacks, you got to take one. Ron Wolf, former GM of the Packers, the
take
Raiders.
One every year.
If not every year, every other year, right? You got to always be on your radar because you never have enough of them. You need three. You need three. The 49ers proved that last year. You need three. So there's going to be some good guys on day three this year.
And sadly, in the NFC Championship game, they actually needed four. And
they did.
Four.
They did.
And by the way, just as a follow-up, that I struggle with that Tennessee offense, man. Like, you watch it, and it's like, this doesn't even resemble NFL football. And even for Jalen Hyatt, right, who just was, so much space, just a bunch of deep routes and comebacks. Like, I struggle with that offense sometimes, figuring out how those guys are going to translate.
Well, and here's the thing. You say it's not an NFL offense, but – after a few weeks last year, I think we saw more teams running stacked receivers because they saw what those guys are not dumb. They watch what's going on Saturday.
No, that's true.
So I think some of that is already filtered in. Now, the difference is the pro players, the pro defensive coordinators are going to adjust much more quickly.
And you don't have the hashes to create all that space either, right?
That's right. So in the end, I think a guy like Hyatt can create after the catch enough. And I'm not saying he's going to be super great, but I think he's going to be a first round pick because he can do something after the catch. He wasn't all deep balls. He wasn't all slot phase. So I think he's got enough of that that somebody will have interest in him. And with Hooker is the same thing. Look, is he Kyle Trask was a round two guy. Hendon Hooker's a better player than Kyle Trask was. And you saw when Trask lost his guys at the end of the year at Florida, it just wasn't there. And I think Hooker's got enough skill. I liked him a little bit at Virginia Tech. I liked him in his first year at Tennessee until he got hurt. So this wasn't totally out of the blue. But look, he can only throw to the guys where his offense is telling him to throw it to, right? And if he's accurate, he doesn't have a plus arm. He just doesn't. It's okay. But I think he's got enough traits that he can become a starter in the right situation.
Chad, this is great. Sorry for taking you a little bit long. Hope I didn't kill you.
Yeah, no problem.
It was always great. I always love catching up with you at the Combine and the Senior Bowl when I see you. Enjoy the rest of the process. You got about 4 weeks to go, give or take. Yep. And then you can start all over in the beginning of May. And that's
right.
That's when the fun starts.
That's right. That's when my most fun time getting to, review the old guys that I've already seen and then get to know some new guys and now with the COVID eligibility, you've got like 400 guys that I'm carrying over from last year. So
you're six.
I've already seen. Yeah, it's great. But anyway, so yeah, that's a fun part.
Anything you want to promote that you want to make sure people keep an eye on with stuff you have coming out?
Yeah. So NFL.com, I'll have some articles coming out probably at least once a week over the next a little bit. And then mock drafts, of course. I've got another 4-round mock draft coming out in a couple of weeks. Then I got the big 7-round mock draft coming out the week before the draft. So if you like mock drafts, if you like little one-off articles, check me out at NFL.com. And of course, check out all the other great writers we have too. It's a great place to work and work with a lot of talented people.
Absolutely. 7 rounds. God bless you, sir. May God be with you. Chad, good stuff, man. Appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the Giants Huddle Podcast. Chad Ryder, check out all the stuff over at NFL.com and everything else they're doing over there at the NFL Media Group. Thank you, everybody. It's all brought to you by PSE&G. We'll see you next time.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Turns out a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyer's.com today.